This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Good Monday morning and welcome into Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. Live from my basement in Danny's laundry room, week three of our quarantine shows continue. Danny, how was the weekend?
Pretty solid, my friend. The cooped up kids phenomenon, part 1 trillion and 1 billion and whatever else, man. It is an adventure each and every day trying to find something for these kids to do. Just put them, you know, trying to get them tired between sleep. I tell you what's so weird is when yesterday, by the way, just gorgeous, right? Beautiful, beautiful day. So much fun. Just go outside, walked around, did a million different things. If you had fallen asleep like 6 weeks ago and woken up, you would go, everything is mostly normal, but something seems off, right? Because everybody's outside when it's gorgeous out. But everybody, you know, when I'm pushing my littlest in the stroller, right? And people are walking towards me and they bow out onto the street like 7, 8, 9, 10 feet, like I'm carrying. Right. You know, live tiger or snakes or something like that. And they give me this wide berth. You'd be like, everything's really strange. You see people out and about, but they're all following the rules, right? So you wouldn't know anything's wrong specifically, but you would sense that something is amiss, which is kind of the way it is. But on a day like yesterday, when everybody's getting outside, it's just, you know, you see neighbors in each other's yards, but, you know, keeping their distance from anybody that's not their spouse directly. Just so weird, man.
No doubt about that. I've spent more time outside, not specifically like walking or anything like that. I normally do that stuff anyway, but just sitting on my back deck.
Yeah.
Or randomly on my porch yesterday. Like, I don't have the porch that you see in the movies that people have chairs out on and they sit there and they read or something like that.
It's a solid porch, though.
I got concrete steps. That's what I have. Like, it is a very normal, traditional porch. You would never be out on it. There's no chair there. There's no reason to be there. But yesterday, I just went outside and sat on my steps. I was thumbing through my phone and just kind of sitting there looking around. And I'm like, when is the last time I've done this? Oh, wait, I've lived here since 2014. I've never done this in my life.
Yeah, I'm moving soon. I better do it before I go.
Exactly. But, right? But seriously, I mean, I think that there is just a wanting to get out of your house kind of feeling. This is why I would not be good at working from home. Like, a lot of people work from home exclusively, and they enjoy it, and God bless them. That's great. I need to get out of my house. I know, like, when I was on the Redskins beat, it was almost like being a teacher when you get those 3 months off. Mm-hmm. On the Redskins beat, you work from home half the year because you're at Redskins Park every day. You're at the practices. You travel to the games. But then from January to right around early July, other than the occasional event you go to, the combine, the league meetings or something, there's a lot of stuff going on, but it's all covered on your computer at your house. And I can't tell you how many times I would just go see a movie late at night, or I would just go eat something rather than taking it out and bringing it back, like sit there by myself in a restaurant just to go somewhere. You know, if I was a coffee dude, I'd be the Starbucks king.
Oh, that's right.
I just don't like sitting in my house all day. And I guess that's something a lot of people can relate to, because I've seen the videos now going viral and circulating. People are having these happy hours in their driveways. There was one guy in a neighborhood who brought out like DJing equipment and played a bunch of music, and all of his neighbors were in their driveways like dancing. I mean, there's some funny stuff going on, but I think people are just, they're tired of being cooped up, man.
That is the summary. People are tired of being cooped up, especially, again, I keep, not the word martyrs, nothing special about us, but especially folks with kids. Just the school age kids are driving parents crazy. I really believe that's why school was invented, by the way. Which is basically, these kids need to be out of the house. We don't want them causing mischief. Let's have them learn how to read and write, and then they'll send them back to us tired at night. We can feed them and put them to bed. I mean, it really is just a show. But you're right. Everybody's cooped up, and that's what it is. I'd be good at working from home generally. I mean, I've never had a job until now where if I said, hey, I'm working from home, my boss wouldn't laugh at me and say, no, you're not. You're actually just going to sit in this desk, you mindless numbnuts. But I'd be really good at it because I'm cool, sort of chilling inside. I'll take my one break and, you know, get outside and sort of do whatever. But I'm fine kind of laying around the house. I know that it's tough for some people, you know, like they're not house cats, but I could totally do it. I'd be really, really good at it. I'd also be fat and gross, but I could do it.
Hey, all you cats and kittens. They're not house cats. Cannot wait for 12:45 today.
Oh, I want to
discuss Tiger King. Now, you have not finished yet.
No, I got through, not as long of a window as I would have hoped for this weekend. I think I finished almost episode 4. But I'm working on my Joe Tiger. It's not there yet, but there's something to it.
You're Joe Exotic?
Yeah, what did I say, Joe Tiger? Yeah, Joe Exotic.
He's
sorry.
Also Joe Tiger. Yeah, I need you to keep honing that for 12:45 so that we can hear the Joe Exotic debut.
I mean,
look, nothing. I mean, there are things you'll learn. There are twists and turns that are coming.
Sure.
But basically, you've seen what you need to see.
I have
to
take
this show down.
These are reprehensible people. on all angles of this issue, whatever you want to call it, wherever you stand on the big cat debate from Barstool Sports, all of these people are reprehensible. These are reprehensible, shameful people. There are no heroes. They're nothing but villains. It just depends on different what kind of villain you prefer.
Yeah, I look forward to discussing that on our movie club today. We watched the documentary Tiger King at 12:45. 11 o'clock coming up in about 50 minutes. Bert Brooks, who covers the Eagles in Philadelphia for NBC Sports Washington. It's funny, I texted him over the weekend. I said, hey, want to get someone on to talk Ronald Darby and how good he is at this point, if he's as bad as everyone says he is. And he goes, let me check my schedule. Nope, I'm not doing anything. Yes, I'm happy to come on.
It's
kind of a funny retort.
Good
but
thing.
He'll be on with us at 11 o'clock. The Redskins did sign Darby to a one-year, $4 million contract. He did not have a good stay in Philadelphia.
No. He was a punching bag dude up there.
I mean, he is loathed by that fan base. Now, that doesn't disqualify you from being a decent football player or having success elsewhere. But he missed half the season in his first year in 2017. Basically, half the year in 2018, he only played 9 games. And then he missed 5 games last year. So a lot of time not on the grass. 26 years old, 3 seasons with the Eagles, picked off a total of 6 passes. But for 2 years in Buffalo before he went there, I mean, his rookie year, he was one of the best rookies in the league back in 2015. He played at a level that you thought could lead to him becoming one of the better corners in the league. That did not happen. I have been unimpressed with him completely as an Eagle. I'll just say that. And my guess is that the Redskins are signing him to start, which feels problematic. But after you traded Quentin Dunbar, you're desperate, and desperate times call for signing Ronald Darby to start.
Yeah, do you play corner? Come on down. Are you local? Even better. Did you go to high school within spitting distance of FedEx Field? You can play for the Redskins.
They love it. More than anybody, they are looking for that Oxon Hill, Maryland pipeline.
That's right.
If you are from, you know, that PG County area around FedEx or the DC area, and fans get excited about it, you know, I understand. It's cool to have seen a guy play in high school and then watch him don the burgundy and gold. I just need players that can help me. If you get Buffalo Bills Ronald Darby somehow, cool. If you get the guy the last couple of years with the Eagles when they were ravenous for help in their secondary, I mean, they had a terrible injury concern last year, and before that, just nobody playing well, and he couldn't step up. I mean, it was an issue for them really since they brought him in. But the one thing I will say about Ronald Darby is he has at least in the past proven that he has the requisite skills to excel in this league. He was the 50th overall pick, and he had, I would say, one great year and one pretty good year with the Bills before going to the Eagles. So maybe he's a change of scenery candidate. And it's only a one-year deal. You know my philosophy. There are not bad one-year deals at $4 million.
Not a ton of money either. I'm fine with that approach, by the way. This is the wacky wall walker approach, right? Just throw it at the wall. See if it sticks. If it does, then maybe Darby goes somewhere else and gets a bunch of money, gets himself a contract. But you benefited from good play that would earn that. And if he stinks, You're not hamstrung for years. You're not Bruce Allen.
Correct. And this is kind of what they've done, not just with Darby, but across the board in the secondary. Yeah. And you think of Sean Davis and some of the other moves. There are a lot of these 1- and 2-year kind of what I call duct tapey fixes, where if something works out, you try to keep that player. If not, you got a year out of them and you find some solutions next year. Mm-hmm. But it is another move that makes it very obvious that this offseason is not really about winning this coming season.
It looks like, again, you're not trying. You just don't want to get yourself in trouble. And I think Ron Rivera, smartly, by the way, has come in and said, if we look at what's failed in the past, not just this past year, why were they 3-13 last year? Well, you have to trace back to all the different steps that were made in between. It was, you know, sort of non-cohesive, non-coordinated approaches, right? Where you overspent on this guy, which means you missed out on this guy, which every domino that fell, they were determined not to hamstring this salary cap situation once you get out from Alex Smith after this year, presumably, with only a $10 million cap penalty. I say only, it's pretty significant, but it's better than it would have been this year or a couple years ago. Once you're out of that, you can really go get some folks. And if you are stuck, like if you've got a Jason Hatcher and you wanted to sign somebody else, you go, oh, well, that position's already solved. You don't get very good play there. They were determined. So the only big ticket items they went for were guys that they believed would be good, not only this year, but next year and beyond, like Amari Cooper, maybe even Austin Hooper. If you don't get those guys, you don't just sign someone just for the sake of signing someone. I give him a lot of credit for that.
He's Danny. I'm Grant. This is The Fan. Next, the company that I've seen that might be working the hardest to keep people safe. I experienced this weekend. It was pretty amazing, so pass that along. Plus, let's take a deeper dive into the Redskins secondary, take out a shovel as of right now, who's expected to start, who are going to be serving as the backups, and where are the needs at going into the draft and the rest of free agency. Day 19, no sports. Grant and Danny on The Fan. He's Danny, I'm Grant. This is The Fan. We are with you today and every day until 2 o'clock, providing just a smidgen of normalcy during some odd times. How about that, though? 19 days without sports. Does it feel like it to you?
Yeah, it feels longer. It feels like more than that. You know, like that dumb joke that married couples always make where, you know, it's like, how long have you been married? 3 years? Feels like 10.
Like, oh, am I right?
But that's how it feels to me. Like, 3 weeks, basically, without sport. Like, it wasn't that long ago you and me were at spring training, right? It's not distant history, but it feels like that was an eternity ago. That feels like last year to me, that you and I flew down to spring training and then couldn't talk to anybody.
When
for the
were
last
we there?
Day.
Was that March 10th?
Something
or was
like
that later?
Yeah, no, around then, yeah. So it's like basically 3 weeks. Like, we went, I think it would have been, we flew 3 weeks ago tomorrow, right? Tuesday night we flew down to West Palm. But it feels like, but it feels like an eternity ago, you know, where the we're sort of playing this by ear. This is weird. We can't go in the clubhouse. And then it escalated each day by 1,000-fold. And the tipping point is that Wednesday, the first day we were down there, Rudy Gobert has it. And that changed everything for us anyway, on our end.
I remember sitting at the hotel bar at the very classy. Where were we? Were we at
the
Holiday Inn?
The Airport Holiday Inn.
Airport Holiday Inn. Awful salad that the guy was eating next to me at the bar.
Just
I was just
kind of
sitting there drinking an iced tea. Mm. And they flashed across the screen that the NBA season had been canceled, and everyone was just kind of drinking and doing their own thing. And then they went back into whatever programming was on, and a guy said, you know, they were talking, two guys at the bar next to me, and I don't think this will be that big a deal. I think it'll blow over. I said, did you just see the NBA canceled its season? And the guy goes, what? And I said, yeah, the NBA canceled its season. You got to be kidding me. And I was like, no. He goes, well, they won't cancel the NHL. Real men play that sport. And like, that's where we were 3 weeks ago.
Wherever we are now
yeah, on day 19.
All those fake men in the NBA, those you know, 6'8", 250-pound,
right,
you know, non-athletes that can't touch the top of the backboard. All those guys aren't real.
That guy was spewing a lot of other hot takes that I won't touch on this station.
Oh, I remember. Oh, that was the. Oh, that's right. It was that convo. Yes.
It was a fun convo. The longest stretch since August 12th to September 3rd, 94, without sports. We're in the middle of it right now. In 1994, in August, here's what your world looked like. The World Cup had just been won by Brazil. The Cowboys had won their last Super Bowl. The Rockets, Rangers, Arkansas men and UNC women were all title holders at the time. Forrest Gump had just come out in the movie theater with other movies that year, Natural Born Killers, Clear and Present Danger, and Little Rascals. And on the radio, one of the big songs was I'll Make Love to You by Boys to Men.
Oh, sure
it was. I Swear by All for One, which was one of my jams. Can You Feel the Love Tonight by Elton John. What a year for music.
Seriously.
And Fantastic Voyage by Coolio.
Of,
that was
yeah, a lot of ballads in
playlist.
There. Yeah, a lot of ballads in there about the R&B genre crushing it at that moment.
So here is the weirdest thing I kind of experienced this weekend, but I give him a lot of credit. Trader Joe's is going hard in the paint. Great company in general. My wife used to work for Trader Joe's, and I've always
so
been
wonderful.
Enamored with how they do their business. And everyone that works there loves working there. Like, that's, to me, the sign and the hallmark of a great organization, outfit, company, what have you. Are the people there smiling? Do they want to be there? Do they all say nice things? Because just think about your buddies. Ask them about the company they work for. They're probably going to complain and kvetch about it for a half hour before they say anything nice, right?
Sure. Human nature. Absolutely.
You don't get that, really, from people that work at Trader Joe's. But I had to go to a TJ's this weekend. I wasn't going into shop or anything. But I'm moving, as we haven't really talked about much on the show. I'm sure we'll talk more about it here in the coming days, now that the cat's out of the bag from this weekend. But so because I'm moving, I need these boxes for my bobbleheads. I've got probably all told, I would say, like 250 bobbleheads. And I'm trying to get wine boxes because they have the little slots, you know what I mean, for wine bottles.
Okay, yeah,
and
yeah.
They're great for carrying. You can kind of put a bobblehead in and put a little thing down and stack another bobblehead on top. So it's kind of nice. So I was trying to get those, and I knew Trader Joe's had a bunch. Turns out, because of everything going on, they're not giving me boxes. Not an issue. They gave me two total boxes. But so I go there to get the boxes, and there is a line that looks like people are waiting to get into the busiest club in Miami on a Saturday night.
Are you on the list?
Exactly. There's little, and I'm not joking. I'll bet you there were 40 people in line.
Oh, I'm sure.
And they were. It's hard to count and tell because they're kind of socially distant. Like, there are marked every several feet spots where you stand in line so you're not going, like, shoulder blade to nipple. And so they're standing in this line waiting to get into Trader Joe's. There are two employees on either side of the doors at Trader Joe's. One is, I don't really know what her exact role was, but she was kind of like welcoming and greeting and kind of calming people. The other guy literally just had a big old vat of hand sanitizer that he was squirting on people's hands as they walked in.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone seemed to be in some type of gloves. So yep. I don't know if they were passing those out. I'm guessing they were, or if people were just wearing them. I didn't see many masks there, although I've started to see a lot more masks at the grocery store where I go at Safeway and stuff. But I just thought it was incredible. Like, they have a number of people they're allowing into the store to shop at a time. They're going one in, one out, literally. And then they're as you go in, they're spraying you with sanitizer. And as you come out, they're spraying you with sanitizer. I just feel like maybe that's doing nothing. Maybe it's doing very little. Things like that are comforting and calming effort. And make you think you've got a chance to beat this thing, as a shopper, it's worth the extra 5 minutes to drive there, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's just show me that you acknowledge what's going on and the effort that you put in. As you said, that's why Trader Joe's is always that way. Whatever this is, if you change some of the circumstances, they would be doing something similar. Just going that extra mile, making you feel welcome, et cetera. I have always had an affinity for that company, but you're right.
Do you think they have to spend more to do something like that? Like,
yeah, I mean, you got to change allocation and resources, and you got to have somebody there, you know, to babysit and you know, stagger the line. It's like merging during rush hour on 66 or something like that. Of course, it costs them, and you're probably not doing the sales volume you normally would. And I mean, I think about all these businesses, all these, you know, people that I've gotten to know over the years from, you know, neighborhood type stuff, and I just, my heart goes out to them. I mean, obviously, you know, the worst part, of course, are people that are getting sick, and, you know, we've heard all those stories. But the next layer down are folks that are absolutely 100% affected by this, you know, where it's you don't have a job, or you don't, you know, have you're operating on 10% of what you normally take in, and the rent is due, all those kinds of things. Real, real, real challenge.
It is baffling, you know, it really is, that somebody is willing to wait in a really long line to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, in other words, if I pulled up and I see 30-some people down the pathway in front of the store, I'm not going to be the 31st. I'll just kind of try this again another time,
sure,
closer to closing. But people seemed very calm. I guess you got nothing else to do. I mean, it's not like normal where Well, sure. I was going to go, but I'll run and go get lunch over at this place. I mean, you're just going back home to sit down, so if you're going to be wasting time, you might as well stand outside.
Yeah, the weather's nice. It's not like it's 2 degrees in the wind, you know? It was a nice day. Yeah, I'll stand outside 6 feet apart from the person in front and behind me.
Do you personally know anybody in your life, a friend of yours or anything that you know has COVID-19 right now?
Knock on wood, no, not at the moment. I mean, it's all anecdotal. It's everybody that I know has somebody, you know, 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon that may, you know, like one of my good pals has a patient that has it. And, you know, then somebody's someone that, you know, their wife worked with or that their aunt and uncle worked with. But nobody directly. No, not at the moment.
I had my first conversation last night. A good buddy of mine I've worked with for many years in radio, longtime writer. I texted him just to see how he was doing. I said, hey, man, how you been? And I'd seen him, you know, on Facebook say something kind of funny. And I was thinking about him. He said, not good. He said, call me. So I called him, and he had some real bad health issues semi-recently that he'd just gotten over, and it took some chemo and different things. And sure enough, he is battling COVID-19 right now. And he was taking me through some of the symptoms, and he said as far as some of the cases that he's heard, his situation is somewhat mild because he's not having terrible breathing issues. But, I mean, he was shaking so badly at times yesterday with the chills that he couldn't send a text message.
Ooh.
You know, and he was sitting here telling me how he's got it so good, and he's very labored in talking and doesn't sound like himself. And it was, you know, he was upbeat. And he was talking about, I'm going to beat this. It's not going to be an issue. But his wife now has it. I mean, he's basically quarantined in his room. She's quarantined in a room. Their kid is talking to them on the phone at the house because, you know, obviously can't interact with them. It's a really tough situation, and I'm pulling for everyone who's dealing with this and it's real, you know, and I think that's kind of the message he passed along to me is just be careful. You know, I keep hearing people saying things like, among other things, you know, does anyone know anyone dealing with this? Or if you don't, I mean, is there as many people as we think? Yeah, man, it takes finding out one story or having one person. Everyone's healthy until all of a sudden you're not. And health
you're
is
not,
one of those
right.
things, man. It's a slippery slope. Like, you feel amazing one minute, you don't the next minute. And you can't just touch a button to get it back. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, of course. And here's what's strange is, again, like on in our little neighborhood, you know, nice, quiet little family neighborhood, you wouldn't know anything is amiss. I mean, now we're obviously aware of the information and we're all taking steps. We're doing what we're supposed to do. We're not, you know, hugging and shaking hands and doing the rest. But you wouldn't know that there's any problem. People are out gardening. People are playing in their yards. People are going to, you know, fields to let their dogs run. Just normal things. But yet, right down the street where Georgetown University Hospital is, I'm sure they're overwhelmed. And I'm sure that, you know, my friend who works at Inova is wearing a surgical mask every day and working 15-hour shifts, you know? Like, I was talking to my buddy yesterday who lives in New York. He lives in Brooklyn now. And he's like, again, you wouldn't know that anything is amiss. This is like a if you go to the beach and it rains, you have to kind of stay inside a little bit more than you normally would. There's nothing directly affecting people that are not with this, right, that don't have this, and yet if you know, went to Cedar Sinai or went up the road to one of the local hospitals, they are on the front lines, just in you know, just stretched beyond you know, that there's no PPE, there's no, you know, the conditions, and they are like at capacity now, and it could get even worse, etc. But for the rank and file, just people just walking around, you know, taking their babies in a stroller or whatever, you wouldn't notice anything's amiss. It is such a weird thing.
He's Danny. I'm Grant. This is The Fan. Next, we'll take a deep dive into the Redskins secondary. Ronald Darby added at corner. Are they set at that position? What about safety? This is The Fan. I'm Grant. He's Danny. This is The Fan. At 11 o'clock, Barrett Brooks, who covers the Eagles in Philly, on what the Skins are getting in cornerback Ronald Darby. At 11:18. Dale Jr. over the weekend making a little noise about Chase Young, not Tua Tagovailoa, at number two. You haven't really heard much on the Tua front at number two. Did that come and go? Did that just kind of pass like a ship through the night? Or is there still a possibility, even after bringing in Kyle Allen, that the Redskins could go quarterback with the second pick if they love the Alabama lefty? So we will talk about that next hour here on G&D. But let's get into the secondary right now, Danny, because going into the offseason, we all knew this was an area where the Redskins were going to have to make some adjustments.
Indeed.
What we didn't know at that time, though, was that they were going to trade Quentin Dunbar, who was going to be really unhappy, and that he wouldn't be around as their best cornerback. So as of right now, starting at corner, you've got Darby, who you signed yesterday to the one-year, $4 million figure. You've got Fabian Moreau, who was better outside than inside after he made the transition last year. Former third-round pick out of UCLA, 2017. In the nickel, Kendall Fuller, who you signed to a big contract. I mean, there was some kind of eyes wide around the league when they saw the Redskins put $10 million a year in Kendall Fuller's basket to come in and be their interior corner and three and four receiver sets working in the slot. And then presumably Jimmy Moreland is kind of the next man up, Danny Johnson, Greg Stroman. So there's your corner position. I don't think that's good enough yet. I'd like to still add a veteran who can help. I don't think that guy's out there. I think most of the corners you're bringing in are guys who either play in the nickel, like Logan Ryan, or, more importantly, I guess, have major flaws, like Ronald Darby. So maybe you just have to draft the guy. But if you're taking Chase Young at two, you don't pick again until the third round. You need a left tackle and a tight end, probably worse than corner. When would you draft that player? And if you're taking them in the late rounds, are they really going to be good enough to help you right away?
Right. We've done that dance, haven't we? Now, sometimes it works out. I would say they got good value for Breshad Breeland, right? You I believe it was a fourth-round pick, and you developed him, and there were some problems just in terms of him getting along with folks when he was here in D.C., but he was productive. That's a win for a fourth-rounder. Then you've had some of the mixed bag, right? You've had the David Amersons that didn't pan out, really, or you've had the kind of TBDs at the Fabian Moreaus, you know, guys that were had wrinkles, they were injured in college, could have been higher picks, etc. But not having a second-round pick, as Ron Rivera's even said, is a real challenge here when it comes to sort of establishing the depth. So right now, their plan seems to be, if we can't get A players, right, if we can't get 7, 8s, 9s out of 10 to solve these things long-term, we're going to throw some stuff at the wall. We're just going to throw cheap and available Spurrier's wide receiver plan at the wall and see if anybody becomes productive. If Sean Davis turns into the guy they think he is, this physical specimen who was injured last year in Pittsburgh, then maybe that's your safety for 4 years, 5 years, etc. If he's not, you know, we'll kind of go back to taking bites at the apple next year. I don't know how you're going to acquire everything, and I think they've give them credit. They realize you can't fix 3-13 in one offseason. You can incrementally improve. Goodness, easy for me to say. But the idea that you're just going to wave some magic dust and be the San Francisco 49ers and go 14-2 next year, I think is naive.
Yeah, and in a league where you probably can get better fast, you got to put all your chips into that basket, and it still may not happen. San Francisco, I think, is a rare example in being as bad as they were to as good as they were. Because remember, they went from not having Jimmy Garoppolo and starting Nick Mullins and a Beathard to be named later to having all of a sudden Garoppolo back, which was their plan, and he got healthy, and that helped a whole lot as he put together a solid to good season. I know he's a punching bag, but look at his numbers, mid to high 20s touchdowns with a low interception rate and plenty of passing yards. I mean, he was a highly rated quarterback who gave them a chance more often than he didn't. But back to the Redskins and their secondary for a moment. What you're saying, I think, is they've taken no real risks. You know, Kendall Fuller is probably the biggest dice roll you've got here this offseason, just because of what you paid him at about $10 million per. That's the one large investment you've made. Investment means some risk generally. But even in his case, I don't think they're going to ask him to do a whole lot that he hasn't thrived in already executing and doing. You know, I don't think he's going to play outside that much. You know, maybe in the rare situation where there are two receiver sets you're operating against, which is the minority of the time in today's National Football League, basically, maybe you'll see him out there at corner some. I certainly don't think they're going to actively avoid it. But everyone that I've talked to with this team and around Kendall Fuller over the last couple of years has been, this guy is now a nickel and a free safety, and the Redskins are going to play him some at safety. Mark my words. They're going to play him at nickel corner. I just don't see a lot of outside corner play from him, but you're paying him enough money that he's got to be on the field, obviously. So the question then becomes, you know, really Sean Davis at safety. He's interesting. You know, they feel like they may have gotten a steal. He was a two-year full-time starter before getting hurt after one game last year with the Steelers. It's not like those were the best 2 years of recent Steelers defense. But if you can play for Mike Tomlin and his secondary on that defense for a contending playoff caliber team and be a down-in, down-out starter, there's no reason to believe if he's healthy, he can't at least mask some deficiencies from the Monte Nicholson era next to Landon Collins. And I kind of like their depth there now, where Troy Apke, great on special teams, DeShazer Everett, exceptional on special teams, Jeremy Reeves, okay, good backup. You know, maybe you add another safety at some point. I would more focus my attention on corner, though,
corner for
and
me.
Let safety be what it is.
Yeah, it's the – you've got Landon Collins, who now some of the bill comes due. Last year it was a very creative accounting from Eric Schaefer and company. Of course, he's out of the organization. But they did a thing where they said, hey, we don't have a lot of space. Let's balloon some of these payments into these coming years. Well, here comes a big payment due for Landon Collins. But you're going to expect an awful lot of him as kind of that downhill, I don't want to say in-the-box safety, but – you know, you don't want him turning and running with receivers going down the field all that often. So he's downhill. You kind of have that set, right? You need everybody else to kind of fill in around. I don't know what Fabian Moreau is. I don't know what Jimmy Moreland is. I know that people way overrate him because he had a couple nice plays in the preseason. I don't know if he can be an every down starter on the outside in the NFL, especially in the NFCs. Do you want him lining up on Amari Cooper on a 3rd-and-7? I don't know. I don't know if that's necessarily what I'm excited about. Fuller, I'm with you. I think they like him as kind of that Swiss Army Knife GP, where he may have different responsibilities. I'm not saying he's Tyrann Mathieu, but something like that, right, where a guy could line up in the slot one down, he could be your free safety the next down, he could be in a that old Greg Williams Cobra package with multiple safeties in certain situations. He may have to line up outside if there's motion. He can do a lot, and I think they recognize that, and that gives you freedom to have other guys maybe have less responsibility.
The Olympic Games have been rescheduled, so we can get into that in just a couple of minutes. Also, an NFL power rankings has been released via ESPN.com. I've not yet clicked, but I'm curious to see where the Redskins are among the 32 teams in the NFL. I got a feeling they're going to be near the bottom of that list, so we'll get into that next. Also, just real quick to make your point with numbers on Landon Collins. At 25 years old last year, he made $3.8 million. This year in his age 26 season, he will make $14.2 million against the cap. Mm. And his cap number next year grows to the largest it'll be in the contract, $17.2 million. What a huge cap number at
the safety position
next year. And he'll actually, you know, they could get out of the deal with about $10 million in dead money, which is a lot, if they wanted to after next season. But if they don't, his cap number is moving forward for the next 5 years, $14.2, $17.2, $16.2, $17.2 and $15.2. He was fine last year, but you want more out of him for those type of cap numbers, or else you could find yourself back into a bit of a Josh Norman situation. You're listening to Grant and Danny. When are the Olympics going to take place? We now have dates. We'll tell you next on The Fan. ESPN.com came out with their way too early NFL power rankings. Where do the Redskins rank, you might be wondering. I'll tell you in just a second. Welcome back, Grant and Danny, on 106.7 The Fan. So, top of your head, NFL power rankings right now, who would you list number one?
Heading into the season, you'd probably say Kansas City, right, just because they're the defending champs?
They did indeed put the Kansas City Chiefs at number one. What's interesting now, and this is the first time I've seen this because it's the first power rankings I've seen. We normally don't do these on March 30th as an industry.
Sure.
But they're admitting this is way too early, and they're just kind of giving you some fodder here.
Is anyone here looking for content?
Right. The Patriots have fallen to 13.
Yeah.
So this will be the first time in 20 years, basically, where you go into a season, and when someone says, who do you think is going to be in the Super Bowl? You don't start from, well, it's probably going to be New England playing. Like, that is now gone, and maybe it'll be back when we find out who their quarterback is, if they go get Cam Newton or something like that. But I think they're going to start on the outside of the top 10 looking in, regardless of who their QB is. But they go Chiefs number one, Ravens number two,
sure,
49ers number three, which makes sense. You got the two teams that played in the Super Bowl and probably the best team in football that didn't get there last year in the Ravens. I think a lot of people are just assuming Baltimore is going to be every bit as good as they were last year. And look, if you look at their offseason to this point, they've had an incredible hiatus. I mean, making the trade for Calais Campbell, keeping Matthew Judon on the tag, re-signing Jimmy Smith, you know, another year of Lamar Jackson. I just heard Pete saying this morning they're bringing in Derek Wolfe on the D-line, where they're already stacked, who's a really good player from Denver. But oftentimes, the teams that are good and seem to get better with personnel, it's not that easy. If just predicting that the really good team from last year whose added talent was going to win again this year was all it took, then I think we'd all make a lot of money making predictions all the time.
Sure.
I don't know why, because the Ravens should be unbelievable on paper. But I would be skeptical of them kind of repeating last year's regular season. Maybe they don't have as good a year, but then they make a deeper playoff run or something like that. That's what I'd pull for if I'm a fan.
I mean,
like Lamar Jackson
hard to
just
do,
doing that again is going to be difficult.
Well, for a million reasons. Number one, do you expect Pittsburgh to be that bad? Do you expect Cleveland to have an inept coach that just sort of, you know, gets rid of wins by accident? Cincinnati would improve. I mean, schedule matters, you know, getting good breaks. I mean, that game against San Francisco, that was one of the best games of the year. If it's not played in the rain, does San Francisco win that game? There's a million things that happen. So I'm with you. They could be better and not have the same record and not achieve in the same way. But everything broke right last year for the Ravens. But it was a matter to me where they needed to improve. Again, and all you can do is sort of build stuff on paper. They needed to get better in terms of their pass rush. They were anemic at that. Matthew Judon was the only guy that could get in the backfield at all, and they had to blitz a bunch. Well, enter Calais Campbell. Enter, Derek Wolfe, who you just kind of mentioned. They're looking to bolster that part of it, and that was their weakness. Now you need to make sure that one playmaker or two is healthy. But, man, that group was excellent last year, especially on offense. When Mark Andrews was right, when he was healthy and getting down the field, that was like their version of Travis Kelce and company in Kansas City. He was their dynamic threat moving down because Hollywood Brown was hurt all the time. That group was really, really fun. But you're right. I don't think they can repeat the exact same success, and it's not a knock on them. It's just really hard to do that.
San Francisco, I'd put in the same boat, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, everyone's saying, well, they got close last year. Ask the Rams. You know, you get to the Super Bowl, getting back there becomes arduous, and you just referenced the rest of the Ravens division. The Rams, I think, could be back. I'm not going to lock that in because I don't trust Jared Goff, but they had a year where they were closer than people thought last year, and oh, by the way, there's an extra team making the playoffs in each conference now if the owners approve that this week, which it looks like they're going to.
Mm-hmm.
You also have Seattle that is not going anywhere, and I like the quiet approach of Arizona over the last two off seasons. Obviously, they brought in DeAndre Hopkins. There was nothing quiet about that.
Yeah, that's pretty. And they unloaded David Johnson's terrible deal and
right.
DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah, they've had a really good offseason to this point. The teams that I do like a lot, you know, they've got New Orleans number four. I think they're going to be right there again. Green Bay number five, NFC Championship game last year in their first year under Matt LaFleur. Seattle doesn't go away number six. They've got Tennessee seven. I'm not buying stock in the Titans. I think they had kind of a magical run last year. The Vikings number eight, same thing. They lose Stephon Diggs. You know, they're paying a lot of guys a lot of money, including quarterback Kirk Cousins and Adam Thielen and a couple of their best defensive players. They just slapped a franchise tag on their safety. And right now, they're losing Everson Griffin, Linval Joseph, Trey Waynes, Mackenzie Alexander, Xavier Rhodes, Andrew Sandejo, Jaron Kearse. I mean, so good luck. I mean, that defense is going to take a huge step back. Those teams could be trending in the wrong direction. Here is the team, though, that we wanted to get into, which is, of course, the Washington Redskins. They rank 31st of 32 teams, ahead of only the Cincinnati Bengals. Everybody who covers the team in each market is responsible and tasked with writing up why the team is ranked where they are.
Mm-hmm.
So that's our buddy John Keim here in D.C. And he says three words, it's going to take time, will take time. The Redskins knew they couldn't rebuild in 1 year under Ron Rivera, so they weren't going to chase every big name. They pursued wide receiver Amari Cooper and missed, but the rest of their signings were more about value and low-risk contracts. We just talked about that. They added versatile cornerback Kendall Fuller, their most expensive pickup, and veteran linebacker Thomas Davis. Third down back J.D. McKissick excites them, but most of the signings were about building depth. Whether it works remains to be seen, but it is the approach. They are focused on the draft where they own the number two pick. Hello, Chase Young.
Yeah, I would have said Carolina should be behind them. Just they're clearly throwing up the white flag and taking the Miami route. It's basically Christian McCaffrey and a gang of misfits.
They Cincinnati. Got Carolina all the way up at 27.
Yeah, that surprised me. I would have thrown just the following teams, just instinctively, right? But I'm not going to quibble with this. The Redskins should be towards the back. They should be in the high 20s, but it's a couple spots different. I would have said instinctively Jacksonville behind them, Cincinnati behind them, the Panthers behind them, and maybe the Dolphins, not quite ready for prime time, although there's some young talent there, and they're going to have a million draft picks if it all goes according to plan. They're probably not ready to start competing just yet. Now, 2 years from now, I think the Dolphins could be, you know, the team on the rise. They could be the next San Francisco when you start looking at all the high picks that they're able to get if some of those pan out. But I would have said a couple teams should be behind the Redskins there, but 31st is not outrageous to me. What about you?
Not bad. No, I mean, it's not what I want to see, but I think that it's probably accurate and fair in the sense that I'm with you. I would have gone in the 27 to 30 range, but are we? I mean, how many Knicks are we going to pick in that regard? In the sense that they were 3-13, they're drafting number two. So the last time games were played, they were the second worst team in the league. Right. The Bengals were the worst. They just kept those two teams in that order. And do we really think that the Redskins have had an offseason that moves them up the radar that much? Again, the move they've made that should help them the most, theoretically, is Kendall Fuller, who's going to play in the nickel and a little bit of safety, kind of out of position, quote-unquote. Outside of that, they got a lot of guys who are just going to compete for playing time. That's basically what they've done this offseason. They've also lost their number one cornerback.
Oh, yeah, by the way.
So they were 31st. How far up are we moving them? I think that's about where they should be. I'm with you, though. The team that I think could be really, really bad this season is the Detroit Lions. I wonder about, Matt Stafford's health. Now, the way that they'd become the worst team in the NFL is if he didn't play and wasn't healthy, and basically it's the end of the road for him. If he's on the field, he's good enough that I think they're going to be in the 6-7 win range, and that would keep them in the 23-26 area of this depth chart. But if something were to happen like last year where you don't have Stafford, the supporting cast around him is worse. And I really believe that Matt Patricia's losing that team little by little, as evidenced by what we saw said by their recently traded cornerback, who was the best player on the team the last couple of years. They don't like him in that locker room, it doesn't seem like. Yeah. They don't have enough talent to mask that either. So they need Stafford to basically keep them afloat because at this point, you know, they're in big, big trouble.
That's my feeling. I don't think he's very good, and I think he's kind of a joke. And he's another example of a guy that's gone out of the Belichick coaching tree. Now, I know you've had massive success of guys like Steve, that, I almost call him Steve Saban, goodness gracious. Nick Saban. Steve Saban, you know the head coach at Alabama, also does afternoons. Anyway, Saban's been incredible.
My favorite thing they do at Alabama's practices is the daily Zabe where they all get around. And they start doing an Oklahoma drill.
Oh, my God. What is the matter with me? I need to get out of the house. Maybe I'm not that good at working from home. Anyway, but, I mean, obviously Saban's the exception of the rule. But for the most part, the Belichick coaching tree, you leave the nest, not a ton of success from a lot of these guys, right? Just it tells you how important Belichick may be to that operation. A guy that's not Belichick trying to act like Belichick doesn't really work. And Matt Patricia, just not very popular, rightfully so, has not really performed terribly well. I think very little of him as a head coach, and they are a mess in Detroit.
He's Danny. I'm Grant. This is The Fan. Next, let's go to Philadelphia. Talk to one of the analysts covering the Eagles for NBC Sports Washington about the newest Redskin, Ronald Darby. Also, I think Carson Wentz is outstanding, and it doesn't seem like most people do. Where are we at on Wentz, and what do Eagles fans think a year after they moved on from Nick Foles? That's next on G&D on 106.7 The Fan.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.